The American media landscape is rapidly changing right now. It's underneath everyone's nose. It's not too obvious, but there's a lot of big moves happening within the past couple weeks. And we're going to go through that right now and talk about what that possibly means. So everyone probably have seen by now, Tucker Carlson is out at Fox. The headlines have been all over the place. And we're not going to go into speculation here because there's a lot of people saying they know why he's out. There's a lot of reasons floating around out there, but he is no longer on Fox Network. His show is no longer being produced. He and his producer are not creating content. So where he ends up, nobody knows. But and that's an interesting thing because he's been, you know, since 2005, he was at MSNBC, started Tonight with Tucker Carlson since 2016, one of the most highly rated news shows since then. So that is a huge gap that's being left. And we've watched the trajectory of this man over those years and his reporting and, you know, his really intelligence on worldviews. And this is a person who's been in the media most of his life. And it's interesting because just recently, just right before he was let go by Fox, he did an interview with some younger guys. And this is what he had to say about really his journey. Take a listen.
All right. I've spent my whole life in the media. My dad was in the media. Like, that is a big part of the revelation that's changed my life is the media are part of the control apparatus. Like, there's no... Yeah, I know. Because you're younger and smarter and you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
But what if you're me and you spent your whole life in that world? And to look around and all of a sudden you're like, oh, wow. Not only are they part of the problem, but I spent most of my life being part of the problem defending the Iraq war. Like, I actually did that. Can you imagine if you did that?
Well, what do you think? What is one of your biggest regrets in your career?
Oh, defending the Iraq war.
That is it?
Well, I've had a million regrets not being more skeptical, calling people names when I should have listened to what they were saying. Look, when someone makes a claim, there's only one question that's important at the very beginning, which is the claim true or not? Mm. So I say, you know, you committed murder or you rigged the last election before you attack me as a crazy person for saying that, maybe you should explain whether you did it or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And for too long, I participated in the culture where I was like, anyone who thinks outside these pre-prescribed lanes is crazy, is a conspiracy theorist. And I just really regret that. I'm ashamed that I did that. And partly it was age, partly it was the world that I grew up in. So when you look at me and you're like, yeah, of course they're part of the means of control. I'm like, that's obvious to you because you're 28, but I just didn't see it at all. And I'm ashamed of that.
Isn't that what the media tries to do though?
It's their only purpose.
Right.
They're not here to inform you. Really? Even on the big things that really matter, like the economy and war and COVID and like things that really matter that will affect you. No, their job is not to inform you. They are working for the small group of people who actually run the world. They're their servants. They're their Praetorian guard. And we should treat them with maximum contempt because they have earned it.
It's so true. That last line, we should treat them with maximum contempt because they have earned it. I've said the same thing. You know, not only, you know, as I look at, you know, how do we bring to justice upon the crimes of Tony Fauci and Francis Collins and these people that foisted a fraud upon us when, and I think committed treason by blocking the investigation of gain of function inside of China and all of it. But behind all of that are these news networks that literally help them block it, refuse to ask the most obvious questions any journalist should have. So they're complicit. You know, they're complicit. The propaganda is complicit. So every death and the blood of those that have died should be on their hands. And it, with AI, if they don't cover AI appropriately, start demanding that people wake up to this, but go along with it because that just happens to be running. Who's running the commercial at the break and telling you what you can and cannot say? It's horrible, but it's dying, right? I mean, I think what we're here to state is that this mainstream media and this propaganda machine is floundering and gasping for air. And I think instead of kicking it in the lake and letting it breathe, maybe we should just throw it in the cooler and grill it on the barbecue.
Yeah, and Carlson says something, when someone says something, the only thing that should matter is it true or not? And that's something we've really prided ourselves here at the High Wire, you know, one of our, you know, mottos is the truth as we find it. This is what we're going to report to you. And that's what we've been doing. And I think that's what really matters. That's what people are really looking for, is just this honest, open debate at this point. And so, you know, to go further into these headlines here, CNN, not immune from this either. Don Lemon, popular anchor there, he's out. Don Lemon says he has been fired from CNN. So again, we'll hold off on the speculation, but that's what's going on.
Maybe different. I don't really consider him a truth teller, but certainly it's a sign that network is trying to find something people care about, because they don't seem to like their anchors at the moment. So, I mean,
absolutely. You know, and remember crashing and burning of the CNN Plus, they tried to do this subscription-based thing and just pull that whole thing. But now we talk about whole networks. Now we go beyond just the anchors. BuzzFeed News, the headline, BuzzFeed News, which dragged media into the digital age, shuts down. They've been going since 2006. So that's a big story. And our friends at Vice News, they announced they're going bankrupt. They've been around since 2013, or it's around 2013. And unfortunately, they are just not going to be able to pay the bills here. You know, particularly anti-vaxxers were a great word for them. They really love talking about the divisive end of the wokeness conversation, very biased in their reporting on medical freedom. And they're going to be shutting their doors very soon. And just in honor of Vice News, let's go back and just check out some of their greatest hits, some of the articles. Del, you might mention this.
They've been great friends of mine for some time now.
they sure have. And if you do a search on their website, if you just type in the word anti-vaxxer, you know, that ignorant, prejudiced word that just has, you know, hidden suffering and neutralized people trying to tell their stories, you're going to see over 6,600 entries of the word anti-vaxxer they use. And they're using it not in a nice way. And here's one of the headlines. Anti-vaxxers think it's time for political and legal revenge. There's you, Del. And it's not so much legal revenge as you saw with Aaron Sear. It's more of a reckoning. It's more of a squaring up of reality at this point. And they've been reporting on some of your goings on since about 2016 when you brought out Vax, the film to cover up the catastrophe. Here's the headline here. Following outcry, Robert De Niro yanks anti-vaxxing film from Tribeca Film Festival. And remember, at that time, no one's seen the film. None of the reporters writing these had even seen the film, because it hasn't even been screened yet. So they're telling people not to see it. It's anti-vax film. And that was one of the big contentious points. I remember seeing you on an interview for the first time and going, who is this guy? And what is this documentary? Because this is electrifying. And these people are hopping mad, and they haven't even seen the thing yet.
So let me just say this to Vice out there. You've had me in your crosshairs for a long time, taking pot shots. Every time you've had the opportunity trying to bring this work down, we've grown. And thank you to all of you out there that have shared our information. You recognize the truth, and you've made us a booming success. But to all of you out there, Vice, just know that I know that you know that I know that you know that I won.
And you know what? Vice was there for some real key moments of purposeful disinformation. One of those was when Joe Rogan had COVID, and he's mentioned passively he was taking ivermectin. Joe Rogan is back from COVID and shilling for ivermectin now. Remember, they were saying he was taking horse dewormer. And then this one that didn't age well, right before the COVID vaccine was pushed out and the mandates started, Vice looked at their crystal ball and their infinite wisdom of journalistic integrity, and they wrote this article. Headline, anti-vaxxers are terrified the government will enforce a vaccine for coronavirus.
They're just being outrageous and, you know, conspiracy theorists. The government would never force this product on everybody without their having a right to body autonomy. Yeah, right. That didn't age very well.
So let's move on. We have kind of the journalistic space, if you will, the media space, the news space. Now we move on to something, dare I say, a little more sinister. So let's start with Joe Biden. He was at the 2023 White House Correspondents Association dinner, and he had some interesting things to say about the press. Take a listen.
All right.
Let me start on a serious note. Jill, Kamala, Doug, and I, and members of our administration, are here to send a message to the country, and quite frankly, to the world. The free press is a pillar, maybe the pillar, of a free society, not the enemy. Thomas Jefferson wrote, you all know this quote, Thomas Jefferson wrote, "We're left to me to decide whether we should have a government without newspapers or newspapers without a government. I should not hesitate to prefer the latter."
All right. Well,
wow. I mean, just such deep and profound words from our president of the United States.
What's interesting and what struck me about that was he is talking about how important free press is, how important, you know, really the First Amendment is. And, you know, one of his digital leads at the White House, when they had an excess of vaccines, no one was taking these COVID vaccines. They had ordered them all. They paid for, you know, hundreds of million dollars. They paid for this and the development of them. And no one was taking these. So their head digital lead at the White House wrote this to Google, who oversees YouTube. And it was about vaccine hesitancy. And he says this: as we move away from a supply problem toward a demand problem, we remain concerned that YouTube is funneling people into hesitant and intensifying people's hesitancy. We want to be sure that you have a handle on vaccine hesitancy generally and are working toward making the problem better. This is a concern that is shared at the highest, and I mean highest, levels of the White House. So we can see there that reporting on, you know, stories of vaccine injury, stories of maybe the vaccine not being effective, stories of natural immunity, this stuff is all going to create vaccine hesitancy. And you had the highest, and I mean highest, levels of the White House saying you can't do that. Mm-hmm. And so people may say, well, that's just one email. But thanks to Matt Taibbi, journalist, going through the Twitter files, giving us the back end of what he called and coined the censorship industrial complex, we can go to this Twitter thread here, and he shows the back end of this. And what he's looking at is the Virility Project. And that was something out of Stanford. We reported on that. It was like this 7-month pilot program that was a plugin for Twitter. And they use that as kind of their censorship dog whistle. These people, this Virility Project, would give them these weekly reports and say, this is misinformation, you got to look at this. And so if you go to Matt Taibbi's Twitter account, he has a Twitter thread of all this. You can read this, but you can see one of these internal emails, and it says, even true stories that cause vaccine hesitancy are, you know, thrown into this. They need to really be wrangle. They really need to be censored at this point. So we see the word vaccine hesitancy, but behind the scenes, these things are being weaponized. And both Matt Taibbi and American author Michael Schellenberger, who's been really out front blowing the whistle on how dangerous this stuff is, they did a congressional hearing and really gave all of their information out there. And Michael Schellenberger put a congressional report forward. It's a 68-page report. You can read it. You just go right to here. You check that out. But it's a testimony to Congress, and it shows in great detail, you know, basically an effort by the U.S. government, intelligence and security agencies, this, you know, the health agencies, to wage basically an information warfare against mm-hmm. the American people. It's that serious. And so behind the scenes, you have this censorship industrial complex that has been erected in the shadows, but really out front now, we're seeing legislation, not just in the US, but around the world, that is trying to curb speech in a lot of different ways. So here in the US, it's a lot of different flavors. We have the Restrict Act. This is going through legislation right now, going through the voting process. It's not yet law. But you go to Reason Magazine, and they have a great write-up on this if you want to get to know about it. It says the Restrict Act would restrict a lot more than TikTok. So this came about because TikTok, it's a Chinese-based app, and people are worried about the, you know, security risk that poses with data mining, surveillance, spying. But the problem is they wrap that kind of social popular problem into this gigantic bill, and the bill has such broad, open-ended language that yeah. It's very concerning, because it talks about foreign adversaries, and that's where the bill is aimed at. But the problem is it allows the Secretary of Commerce to designate new foreign adversaries.
Well, so, I mean, and in a world where we get what appear to be fake foreign advocacy, adversaries like Russian disinformation being thrown mm-hmm. about by yes. politicians that proved to not have been Russian disinformation. But here, again, it's just like, well, if we can label it, then we can wipe it out. And honestly, you know, this is how this works, right? TikTok's scary. I don't want to say, like, China, we know they're mining our information. Their TikTok's different than ours. Certainly, you know, you want a government to step in and protect us. But it just seems like they let these things things, you know, get, you know, way down the line, then they try to scare the heck out of us through the propagandized media, which is crumbling down around them, and then say our solution is we're taking control of the internet for you. No. Well, hold on a second. That's not what we were asking you to do. We didn't ask you to take over our lives and become some authoritarian dictator. We just said, why don't you make some rules for these companies so that they can't take all of our data? But that's just not how this works, right? They use this as a way to just grab even more power and control over our lives.
And they don't want anonymity. So this bill has the potential to criminalize the use of VPNs as the virtual private networks that people use to disguise their identities online. And it also has implications for cryptocurrency and Bitcoin transactions, because those are anonymous as well. So it's so broad that all of this is baked in there. And, you know, the concern was TikTok. And they could have just said, look, if there's sensitive government devices, you're not allowed to have TikTok on that. That could have been the bill. And they otherwise would have left people alone to make their own choices. But that's not what's in here. So it's this broad sweeping thing. Americans really need to pay attention to this because it has bipartisan support. Really make your voice heard. And if they're going to pass this, at least they can whittle this down to what it was supposed to be originally. But we've also, over in the European Union, we've reported on this over the last, you know, year, is the EU Digital Services Act. That's in effect now. It's affecting all the big tech companies across the EU and their services there. That, just in an overview, is basically putting the onus on the big tech companies to police their speech on their platforms with huge, huge fines, like 6% of their yearly revenue fines to do this. So it obviously is going to lead to an over censorship because they don't want to get these fines. But one of the things that just happened, it's really been in the headlines here, is a hate speech law that's going through legislation in Ireland. This is one of the headlines here. It says why we should be concerned about new hate crime legislation. And let's take a look at this thing. Let's get down to the nitty gritty. This is called the Incitement of Violence or Hatred and Hate Offenses, Bill 2022. So they're using the word hate crime. So we're seeing, again, a different angle here. Now it's not so much big tech. It's actually the language itself, the context of the language itself. And in the bill text, it says this. Now it talks about a person. If a person basically prepares or possesses material that is likely to incite violence or hatred against a person or a group of persons on account of their protected characteristics. So it's up for interpretation, obviously. Protected characteristics.
Is likely to incite based on who? Based on some paranoid person, some overly sensitive person?
Right.
I mean, where does this stop? If I, you know, discuss the issue we did this last week on the High Wire, saying, look, you know, should we, you know, have this entire transgender and gender reassignment surgeries and things like that? The people that are pushing this, for some people, that's not what we want our children to be educated on. Does that mean I've called out the educators? Does that mean I'm inciting violence? I mean, who's to determine? Well, you definitely pointed out a group and made people angry at them. It ends all news as we know it, really. It could,
especially on certain topics. And the topics, again, it's open-ended, it's broad. We're talking the gender conversation, sex, religion, disability.
Race,
and
all
so
of
that's,
it, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll go back into the bill here, and here's where it gets beyond scary. It says, the person shall be presumed, until the contrary is proved, to have been in possession of the material in contravention of subsection 1. So that means they are presumed to have that material to use it for hate and to incite violence unless they can prove they didn't.
So guilty until proven innocent.
Written in black and white.
Wow, the exact opposite. Wow, amazing.
Yes. And so this is where it gets to your point about reporting, you know, really just stifling, if not killing, reporting and news. So it talks about how it's communicated. A person shall be regarded as communicating material to the public or a section of the public if the person displays, publishes, distributes, or disseminates material, shows or plays the material. So forget about showing videos. Makes the material available in any other way, including through the use of an information system to the public or the section of the public. An information system is anything, Del. That's Twitter. That's Facebook. That's your phone. You send a send a message, you send a meme, a video to a group of people, like a Telegram group. That's an information system. And so what are the penalties here? Not a couple dollars fine, a couple hundred dollars here and there. We're talking 12 months to 5 years in imprisonment, criminal fines. I mean, beyond hefty here. And so Ireland has something to say about this. In Ireland, they have something called a consultation. So they allow a consultation of the public to get a voice on this. This is kind of like when the FDA has that 30-day window for the public to make comments on a new regulation or a new law. So this is what recently happened. Headline, hate speech consultation received mostly negative responses. It says a total of 73% of respondents to the government's consultation, 2,627 individuals total, did not support the government's plan to ban hate speech. Many of them argued that the only way that speech should be, you know, restricted or whatever is through credible threats and incitement of violence through credible threats. And there's already laws against that in Ireland, in the US, in the UK. We already have laws in the books on that. So going beyond that for kind of an interpretation of this is really dangerous. And that's where we bring back in Michael Schellenberger. He's been watching this, he sees this, and he wrote this article just recently, a couple days ago, "World on cusp of woke totalitarianism as governments act to end freedom of speech." And he has this warning. There has been no moment similar to this one in the roughly 30 years of widespread public internet usage in Western societies. Officials have introduced these policies mostly in the dead of night with little publicity or outcry. There has been a virtual blackout of what's happening by mainstream news media corporations, with many appearing to support the new laws. As shown with the Twitter files, the censorship industrial complex is as much about discrediting accurate facts, true narratives, and content creators who threaten its power while boosting the ones that do. And that is where we're at right now. Just like the AI conversation, the free speech conversation is just as important right now. We're sitting right in the middle of it.
Absolutely. Really, really important stuff, and decides whether the high wire exists in the future and the work that we do. You know, if facts that speak out against an idea, you know, or hurt your feelings, or, I mean, when you think about what our founding fathers said, like, we're supposed to be able to say whatever we want about our government officials and the policies that they have, tear them, you know, like, discuss our problems with them. If we lose that, it's over. It's just absolutely over. We now live in, you know, communist China, Soviet Union, however you want to look at it. Right. And the whole world is looking at this now.